This is the WERU News Report for Tuesday, October 8th, 2013. I'm Amy Brown. Thursday night in Southwest Harbor, there will be a showing of the film 9/11, Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, produced by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, an organization that disputes official accounts of what happened on 9/11 based on their areas of expertise. The event is being organized by Dick Attlee. He's been researching, teaching courses, and showing films on this topic for several years. We spoke with him earlier today about the film, the theories, and the backlash whenever anyone raises this subject.
There isn't a lot you can say to people who fundamentally feel that the government is telling them the absolute truth. And when I showed the Architects and Engineers film Blueprint for Truth a couple of years ago on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, there were, of the 40-45 people who were present, there were two at the end who felt that the government was telling the truth and there was no point in even considering it, and they were just hidebound in that direction. And from my point of view, that's an irrational way to be, and there's nothing you can do to argue with those people as long as they're willing to not start throwing things and creating trouble. That's their business. I'm in the business, basically, of laying out evidence. And one can disagree with the evidence, and the interesting thing is that in the 9/11 community, there's a tremendous amount of disagreement about a lot of things. And, you know, some people attack this film that we're going to be showing, the Experts Speak Out, because they either don't believe that the particular type of explosives that are described in there were used, or think they were just adjuncts to other things like mini-nuclear weapons. And sometimes they have fairly interesting arguments in favor, you know, no matter how unlikely their statements sound. And I'm willing, you know, to look at all of these things and judge for myself based on how adequate the evidence is that is presented what's worth considering.
What started you wondering about this official story? What started you questioning what was being told about what happened on 9/11?
Someone gave me, I can't remember who, back in 2006, a DVD of a lecture that Stephen Jones, who was a professor of physics at Brigham Young University, had given at the University of Utah earlier in 2006, I think it was, in which he basically laid out the sort of fundamental groundwork for why what the government told us happened to the two World Trade Center towers couldn't possibly be true. And up until then, you know, I much as I was against all the things that were being done on the grounds of 9/11, I really hadn't questioned the fact, although there were a lot of people who were. I was totally unaware of it. And it was that caused me to start looking. And once you start looking, or as they say, once you go down the rabbit hole, all sorts of things begin to show up that you had no idea existed.
Now, you say that there are a lot of different theories about what did happen, but what unifies people who question the official story is that there are parts of the official story that a lot of people seem to agree just don't add up. Can you outline what some of those are, some of those key points that have driven your belief that the official story is not true?
Sure. The bottom line for all of these people is that there has to be a new investigation of what actually happened. That is, something's wrong, and all of the investigations that were done by Congress and by various agencies are severely compromised by what you have to, when you start looking at, call fraud, scientific fraud, or complete unawareness of some of the evidence. Some of the things which don't make sense are the fact that they say that the Twin Towers came down as a result of gravity when the planes hit them and fires weakened the steel and it pulled in and the tops then came down essentially like a battering ram and crushed all of the floors below it. This doesn't make any sense when you consider what's called conservation of momentum, which is that when an equal and opposite reaction of forces acting on each other, if you have a given piece that's coming down and bashing into what's below it, every time it hits something below it, part of its underside gets destroyed, an equal amount, basically. And so if you've got 12 floors at the top of the North Tower that are coming down and breaking up, then you could conceivably have 12 floors at the top break up, or 12 floors right below it, and at that point things would stop. And the fact that the top of the towers had much smaller steel supports than the bottoms, it makes no sense. You could destroy an entire 110-story building with just the stuff at the top. In the South Tower, you watch the side falling over, and it kind of vanishes in thin air. It turns into dust, basically. You don't find a big piece tipped over on its side at the bottom, which would have to be the case because of conservation of angular momentum. If this thing is falling, tilting over and falling to the side, you'd expect it to be lying on its side at the bottom of the tower, you know, completely having not hit the rest of the tower. Building World Trade Center 7, which was the other skyscraper that crashed down that day, happened about 5:30 in the afternoon, came down, and every single video, and there are probably about 7 or 8 really good videos from different angles of that building going down. It was like it got sucked into the ground, as if you were watching a standard controlled demolition. There's no explanation on the government's part for how that could have been related to the Twin Towers falling down. It was not hit by a plane. They said there was all kinds of fires in it that weakened a particular section of it, which then fell apart and caused the entire thing to fall down. But the more you look at that report, the more absolutely ridiculous it becomes, just patently. There are problems with that. There's problems with the fact that there was massive amounts of heat in the ground under those three towers for weeks, almost months afterwards, that can't be explained by fires. So that was New York. Then you have the Pentagon, the fact that the person who was flying the plane allegedly really couldn't possibly, most pilots agree that the maneuver that was used, this long downward spiraling curve that was used at the end, wasn't within the capability of a good deal of pilots, and certainly wouldn't have been in his. And the people who say, well, you know, he got lucky, it just makes no sense. The fact that the plane came in at the ground floor at 500 miles an hour with no damage to the ground outside the Pentagon, even with the huge engines hanging down, doesn't really fit. There's all kinds of arguments among the 911 truth movement over what actually did happen at the Pentagon, so a lot of people sort of want to avoid it, not get involved in those fights over whether there was a plane, and if it was a plane, whether it ended up flying over the Pentagon or not. The fact that there was no smell of diesel fuel in the Pentagon immediately afterwards, and one of the women who survived and walked out in her bare feet said there was no fire. People who reported smell of explosives, these are, you know, Army people who probably know what they're talking about. So there's, all of that is a mess. And then you have Flight 93, which supposedly hit the ground, and you can, you know, it's famously a small hole that everybody says, hey, where are the pieces of the plane? There are descriptions of a process in which they started extricating plane pieces from that, but there was another area about 6 miles away that the FBI and police cordoned off and wouldn't let anyone near that was full of debris from a plane. So what happened with that? What about the pilots in the North Dakota National Guard who said that they were tailing the plane and shot it down? There's quite a few different reports confirming that there was a shoot down of that plane, whereas the 9/11 Commission said that no one ever even knew about that plane until after it had crashed, the military, that is. So there's each one of these things has lots of problems associated with. The one other thing is in Flight 93 was the allegation that there were a lot of cell phone calls made from it, which were proved to be impossible to make, and the government kept backing off on whether they were cell phone calls or seat back phone calls as people began to present evidence that each of these things was impossible. And the fact that we supposedly know that box cutters were used by these people is totally dependent on one phone call from Flight 77, which hit the Pentagon, which the FBI produced phone records for a trial, which indicated that none of the calls from this person had ever been completed. So what do we actually know about what was going on? So these are some of the reasons why people are concerned about it. And you could go on and on and on. I know I've been gabbing here now for, 5 minutes straight. And I've only sort of skimmed over the sort of rough surface of it.
We're talking with Dick Attlee. He is the organizer of an event that will be taking place Thursday night in Southwest Harbor. There'll be a showing of the film 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, which is produced by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Before we start talking about the film, can you say a little bit about some of the courses that you've taught and how that's gone? You've taught at senior college courses a few times about this?
Yeah, in Katy Senior College, I taught a course back in 2009 and then did it a second time in winter of this earlier this year.
And what was the reception like for that?
Well, the total number of people who signed up in each case was 6. I was willing to take 12 in the room that we had. The reception of the people who came, some of whom were suspicious that something was wrong and some of whom really felt that the government story was appropriate. What we did was sit around a big table, and I had prepared essentially PowerPoint presentations on each of the main aspects of what happened on 9/11 and what happened before it and what happened after it. And, you know, we just went through it, sort of slide by slide, talking about it, discussing it, arguing to some extent. And all of those people, by the time we were done, one was 8 weeks, one was 7 weeks. By the time we were done, they all were fully aware that there was something seriously wrong. And I think most of them, judging from what they had said before and since, felt that what I had presented probably made a lot of sense in terms of what might have happened. I had done a presentation on Building 7, that 47-story skyscraper, World Trade Center 7, that crashed in the afternoon of 9/11, which people call the smoking gun because of how completely false the description that was done by the government was of what happened there. I did a presentation for Katy Senior College in their Friday morning seminars. I guess there were probably about 20 people there. And almost all of them, once I was done presenting this, had to admit there really was something very bad going on there that the government has completely covered up. I showed the architects and engineers, the same people who put out this current film, their initial film called 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, which was basically a video of a slideshow given by the director of that organization all over the world, in which they cover somewhat the same ground that this current film does, but in a sort of dense slideshow type of presentation. And that was at Southwest Harbor Library, and there were about 45 people. It was jammed. I mean, no room for anyone else. And in that case, as I said, by the time we were done, there were only 2 people out of that crowd who still believed that the government story was true. You know, we can't ask people to declare what they think happened because there's so many different things that might have happened, and we don't really know, which is, again, the reason for calling for a new investigation.
In 2011, Project Censored listed this controversy about what really happened on 9/11 as one of the top censored stories of the year. They said, quote, "Several contentious issues still plague the U.S. government and their version of events of September 11, 2001. Those in political power, along with media elites, would like to see the ongoing grassroots debates surrounding the unanswered 9/11 questions and discrepancies disappear, despite the mountains of evidence that suggest that American citizens were told little about the truth of the biggest single-day attack on their homeland in history." It goes on to say, many unanswered questions still exist, end quote. And usually Project Censored lists things that primarily the mainstream media are ignoring. There's sort of an independent media organization founded back in the 70s. But in this case, it's not just the independent media, and it's not media necessarily always censoring the story. There's a lot of backlash about even talking about this. We get phone calls here anytime we have anyone on talking about it, and you've already had at least one letter to the editor just about showing the film at the library. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's one of the ironies of all of this that you would sort of think that if it was going to line up in a conservative liberal framework, since it was the Bush administration that supposedly did it, that the left would be all up in arms to try and prove that Dick Cheney caused 9/11. But what you find is that the alternative media is actually not a unified world. There's a division between the semi-mainstream alternative media and the really alternative media. And the semi-mainstream media could be characterized by people like Amy Goodman, who is very good on quite a few things, but is, for some reason, she has a deaf ear when it comes to the issue of 9/11. I think she only did one program on 9/11, what we call 9/11 truth, whatever truth it is. It's different from the official story. So she did one program on that, and she invited somebody on who was a proponent of the government story in the classic mainstream media equal time. That is, rather than trying to figure out what's happening, you put two opposing viewpoints on. And then, as with Fox News, she gave most of the time to the person who felt the government story was appropriate. So she has been unwilling to look at this. Noam Chomsky has been absolutely unwilling to listen to it. Matt Taibbi, who is a really good guy on an awful lot of social issues, if you happen to be a progressive, was blistering and vituperative in his attacks on Professor David Ray Griffin, who is the retired theologian who's done most of the pulling together of this evidence into books. He's a wonderful guy in terms of gathering and documenting evidence. So these pillars of left-wing alternativism just can't deal with it. And then you have President Obama, who came on board immediately saying, we will not look back. We will only look forward. And you look at any police force or district attorney in the country who says, I'm not going to look at any crimes that have happened in the past. You don't get very far with crimes then, because they've all happened in the past. So you have that problem, and then you have the problem that 9/11, actually, the more I've looked at it over the years, the more it's become obvious to me that it is only a tiny little piece of a much larger problem. And it was hinted at a book which has just come out recently called 19 Alternative Suspects, I think, by Kevin Ryan, which you can get a sense of when you find out that there were a large number of hard drives that were recovered from the wreckage of the Twin Towers, and they were turned over to a German company to try and recover data on. And in December of 2001, 3 months after all this happened, they put out an initial report on 39 of these hard drives, in which they said there were hundreds of millions of dollars of unusual and otherwise unrecorded financial transactions that were going on in the hours and minutes immediately before the planes hit the towers. And that was the last time we heard of that report. And the company has not put out any other reports. I think they've been bought up by one of the security companies that is under suspicion for what happened at the World Trade Center. But the point is, the more you begin to look at this, the more you realize there were an awful lot of people who stood to gain if they had known that this was going to happen, and the actions that they took indicate that they did. And there's a huge amount of that information, which is hardly talked about, even in the 9/11 truth movement. It just isn't covered, because I guess all the rest of this, you know, blowing up and crashing and everything else is a lot more sexy. But to the extent that these things happen, they indicate that it's a far greater issue than we really are paying attention to. And people say, oh, well, you know, how could anything like this be covered up if there were thousands of people involved in it? And the answer basically to that is, number one, people who raise these issues and who have raised the issues are immediately slammed by the government, put into prison, put through long, bankrupting court cases, or they die unusual deaths. There's any number of those.
Wait, you're saying there are people that these things have actually happened to because they discussed this issue?
You can't. Well, in some cases, absolutely. I mean, there are people like Sibel Edmonds, who is an FBI translator, who wrote a book about her experiences. I mean, and we know exactly why she was put through that, because it's a direct connection.
And what happened to her?
She was put through a court case that almost bankrupted her, because she knew a lot about what was going on in the background of 9/11 as a result of the translation she was doing in the FBI. She tried to talk to Congress. The Republicans absolutely refused to talk to her. The Democrats were really interested in hearing what she had to say until they won the election in 2006, and they turned around and were against her. The judge that was trying the case was using as many really bizarre legal moves as he could to convict her.
What was the grounds for the case? What was she being charged with?
She had been, well, in her case, she was basically trying to, as a whistleblower, she was trying to recover her work at the FBI, the job she'd been doing, and the pay that she should have been receiving when she was fired for blowing the whistle. We could go into what she actually discovered, which is what first opened my eyes to the fact that there's way more going on here than we originally thought about. But what she documents is an attempt to make her, basically put her in jail and drug her to the point where she would be out of the picture. The same thing happened to a woman named Susan Lindauer, who was a go-between with the Iraqi government and the U.S. government, and tried to tell what she had found out about the lead-up to 9/11 and the Iraq War. She was put in prison for 7 months down in Carswell, in the medical wing of the Carswell Federal Penitentiary. And with every attempt they possibly could, they tried to drug her. They had all sorts of false psychological analyses of her. So these people came out of it. They managed to succeed because they had really good people who were willing to hang in with them, and they were willing to take, you know, almost soul-breaking experiences to come out of it. On the other hand, you have someone like Barry Jennings, who was one of the emergency coordinators for the city of New York, who was one of two people who was in the Building 7 early in the morning when a tremendous number of large explosions went off, blew out the lower floor so they couldn't get out, had to be rescued by firemen on the outside. And he described what he experienced, which flew completely in the face of the assertions of the government about what happened in Building 7. The week before the first draft of the government's report on Building 7 came out, he wound up in the hospital and died under these circumstances you have to call suspicious, because there was no death certificate filed. The person who had been doing most of the interviewing with him hired a private detective who he said was one of the best in New York to try and find out what happened. And the detective called him up the next day and said, "This is a matter for the police. I don't want to hear from you ever again about this. I'm not going to do anything with it." And never heard from her again. He went to visit the family. The family had disappeared, and no one knew where they had gone. You know, we can't say that this is an open and shut case, that this guy was put out of the picture just before the official report came out that he could have, you know, completely gainsaid. But it's strange. So that people get the message that you don't want to talk about this, and the people who actually would have been involved in at the upper levels of it had everything to gain from it, and they certainly wouldn't talk about it because it was their job. That's what they did. So to say that if someone would have talked in the face of history, like the Manhattan Project, where there were, I think it was about 100,000 people were involved in the development of the first atomic bomb, and nobody ever said anything. Nobody. So if there are various reasons why people won't talk, and to say that someone would have talked is not evidence. It's a duck around evidence. You look at what actually happened, not who should have said something about it. And you look for who benefits, the old Roman statement, qui bono. You know, who benefits from a crime? And the picture you get is not 19 Arab hijackers who somehow managed to evade the most advanced air defense system in the world. In every single case, all four cases, they supposedly managed to elude this air defense, working out of a cave or whatever in Afghanistan. That's not looking at who benefits. Who benefits is a whole other world of people, and most of them are basically in positions of power, either in the government or in the revolving door moving in and out of government.
We're talking with Dick Attlee. He is the organizer of an event that will be taking place Thursday night in Southwest Harbor. There'll be a showing of the film 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, which is produced by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Dick, we have just about 2 minutes left. So if I'm assuming that after the film on Thursday night, there'll be a discussion. Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
So people can ask questions then. And tell us a little bit about the film in a nutshell, just so people know what they would be coming to see.
It's a series of engineers, structural engineers, chemical engineers, physicists, and one guy who was an explosives demolition expert, who are talking about, well, there are two of those actually, who are talking about what happened at Building 7 and the Twin Towers. This is restricted to what happened in New York, and the evidence that's come out since then that leads you to believe that explosives were used to take these towers down that had nothing to do with either the airplane impacts or the fires that resulted from it. And each of them has their own, you know, bit of the evidence that they look at, and they lay it out fairly thoroughly. People who want to disagree with it, and there are people in all areas who will argue against various aspects of this, are completely free to do that. And the reason I'm interested in showing the film is to expose people to it, get them intrigued so that maybe they'll do their own work of looking around and beginning to see the large panorama of what's out there. I'm going to offer to people free DVDs at the end of this. One is the full version. This is only the hour version of this film. It's an hour and a half, the real version, and I'm offering free DVDs of that, and some of the 9/11 Press for Truth, which I think is the best first video anyone could look at on this subject.
And this is going to be taking place at the library in Southwest Harbor?
Yeah, the film will show from 7 to 8, and then there's a half an hour after for discussion, and I'll certainly sit around if other people want to talk beyond that.
And this is coming up on Thursday this week.
Yes.
And any websites or places that you recommend that people go for more information?
I'm putting together a page of resources of this sort that I'll put up on the web for people to look at. I also have a list of all the alternative 9/11 books that are available through interlibrary loan from the Minerva catalog for the state of Maine. The Architects and Engineers site, if people want to look at that, although I think it's not as easy to navigate as one could hope, is ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org. They're an organization of over 2,000 engineers and physicists who have risked their reputations, basically, to sign on to saying there is something wrong and we need a new investigation.
And that's the WERU News Report for Tuesday, October 8th, 2013. I'm Amy Brown. Join us here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 4:30 for independent local news.